Today we begin Sefer Nehemiah. Okay, Nehemiah, beginning of a new Sefer. Okay, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Divrei Nehemiah ben Hakaliah. The words of Nehemiah ben Hakaliah, Vayehi, when did this event, when did this Sefer take place? We'll see the parsha in a moment, but let's just jump into the Pasuk first. Vayehi, V'chodesh Kislev, Shnas Eshrim, it was the month of Kislev, the 20th year. Vani Hoyisi Bishushan Habira. Could not have a better Pasuk for the week before Purim. And Nehemiah was stationed, Hayisi, I was stationed Bishushan Habira in Shushan the Bira. There's Shushan the city, and there's Shushan the Bira. That means there's some type of capital or some section within the city of Shushan where the Mat Melech had his palace and all official government activities took place. Now, first of all, we have to understand, is this really a separate Sefer? Good morning. Is this really a separate Sefer? Is Nehemiah separate than Ezra? In Chazal, in the listing of the 24 Sefer Tanakh, Nehemiah is part of Ezra. It's not considered a separate Sefer. And that's really what Rashi alludes to. Mikan ve'el, the first Rashi, Mikan ve'el, kosav Nehemiah, Sefer zeh. It's a little bit Rashi really is hedging his bets. It's a little bit of both. It's not clear what Rashi means. Rashi on the one end says, Sefer zeh, this Sefer, which seems to indicate that it is separate, and in fact, I mean, it starts, according to our tradition, it's not exactly clear. Thank you very much. Let's pull this down. It's not clear who arranged, you know, the prokem, you know, was made by non-Jewish printers, non-Jewish the prokem. But to what degree? Here we have an entirely different Sefer. Who was the one that broke up the two Sfarim in the way that we have it today, where it begins with Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph? Okay, that's not clear. But Rashi does seem to indicate that there is some type of balance between it being a separate Sefer and it being a continuation, because Rashi says that Sefer Zeh, but yet it says Mikan Ve'elech. Mikan Ve'elech seems to clearly indicate this is a continuation of Sefer Ezra. When we learned Sefer Ezra, we had a discussion with the order as to where it should be positioned in the Chavdal of Sifrei Tanakh. Does it come after Divrei Hayamim? Does it come before Divrei Hayamim? Is it somewhere in the middle of the Chumash Megillah? So there are different opinions. The first pasuk of Sefer Ezra, the first two psukim of Sefer Ezra, are identical to the last psukim of Sefer Divrei Hayamim, which would seem to indicate that Sefer Ezra is a continuation of Divrei Hayamim. And indeed, in some printings of Tanakh, in some of the editions, Divrei Hayamim precedes Ezra and Nehemiah. And most of the printings of Tanakh today, the new editions, it's not so. Divrei Hayom is accepted as being the very end of the Chavdal of Sifrei Tanakh. But if that's the case, it seems to be chronologically out of order, because Divrei Hayom ends with those two psukim, which describes Koresh issuing his proclamation that the Jewish people have a right to return to Eretz Yisrael, and then Ezra picks up upon that and tells us exactly what happened at that point in time. And then we come to the words of Nehemiah. But what is this certain? Nehemiah, I really shouldn't say that's either certain, but Nehemiah, even if we're going to put, we have a debate where we're going to put Sefer Ezra, will we put it before Divrei Hayam? Will we put it after Divrei Hayam? Will we put it somewhere in between the Megillos? How are we going to arrange it in the order of Tanakh? But one thing is certain, Nehemiah is part of Ezra. In the order of Tanakh, you'll always have Ezra followed by Nehemiah. Now, that does not necessarily mean that what we're going to learn in Nehemiah took place after Ezra. That is Rashi's approach. Rashi learns that the events are in chronological order. The events of Sefer and Nehemiah, we're going to right away, we jump into them right in the first Rashi, the second Rashi immediately took place after what took concluded in the time of Ezra. But we're going to see that not everyone agrees. Some learn that the events we're going to over here took place before Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael. Yes.
Summary of history.
Yeah, but it stops. It abruptly stops it's a summary of history, but where does it end? It ends with Koresh. It ends before the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. So it's a little bit strange, because on the one end, you would put it at the very end, because it's summarizing history from the time of Adam, Harish, until the end of time of Tanakh, but yet, that's not the end. We have Ezra and Nehemiah, and we have Megillah Esther, which record events that took place after the last Pasuk of Divrei Hayamim. So that raised the question, what is the objective of Divrei Hayamim? Was Divrei Hayamim a book that was written to record what has happened in history, or maybe it was a book that was written to inspire the people living at the time to go forward in history? And this is a very big debate. I heard a Rosh Shivan from Yeshiva University speak about this issue. When you discuss every sefer, when you come to a sefer, you have to understand why was the sefer written? What was the purpose? Generally, we assume it's a record. It's a record, Shlomo HaMelech, or let's say David and Shmuel, they wrote sections of Nevi'im Rishonim were written after they occurred to record the events, to record the lessons, the hashkacha of what has happened, because history repeats itself. And there's what to learn, there are lessons to learn, there's hashkacha, and you have to learn knowing how to deal with similar situations in the future. When it comes to Divrei Hayyam and Ezra Nehemiah, many of them, even Megillas Esther, even especially Megillas Esther, there's a very big debate if that's the reason why they were written. And this all gets into the debate of what's the difference between Kesuvim and Nevi'im. If it's true that Ezra and Nehemiah were Nevi'im, so why isn't Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah part of the Nevi'im? Why are they part of Kesuvim? So one approach is, what makes a Sefer part of Nevi'im is not necessarily who the author, or the time period, or the time of Nevi'im, or a later time period of Ruach HaKodesh. It's the agenda. It is the purpose. Why was this Sefer written? The Sefer Nevi'im pretty much were written as a record of what has happened in the past, to learn from, to extrapolate, nice of a Siman Labanim, see what has happened, and when things will occur in the future, you'll be able to look back at what happened during the time of the Nevi'im, read their words, take Musar, and know how to conduct yourself and deal with new situations which arise. Sifrei Kesuvim is not necessarily the same. Sifrei Kesuvim, well, some opinions hold that they were written directly for the people living at that time. There were people living during the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, and this book was recorded for them, not for us. We also derive benefit. It's preserved forever in Kesuvim, but that was not the primary focus. It was focused specifically for the generation who was living at that moment in time. And it was written to inspire them what to do, how to conduct themselves in the immediate future. Take Musar of what has happened, Divrei Hayamim. Look at it was a time period when the Divrei Hayamim ends with Koresh issuing the proclamation. It's now time to go back and return to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Many Jews says we're not interested. Only 42,360 Jews picked themselves and went to Eretz Yisrael. Most are not interested. So there along came the author of Divrei Hayamim, whoever wrote Divrei Hayamim, and said, "You're fools. Why are you lazy? Why aren't, look at your glorious history?" And history was rewritten, not rewritten, was reviewed as with the focus of highlighting events to serve as an inspiration to continue this legacy, to continue what we had on a glorious past, and go and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and repeat and continue, extend. What we've had in the past. It's not written for all generations to come back and look, we have a situation, how do we deal with it? That's Sifrei Nevi'im. Sifrei Kesuvim is an inspiration to the people living at that time. Look, we have what to do, we have what to learn from, and don't focus on things which hold you back from building the Beis HaMikdash and rebuilding your lives in Eretz Yisrael and bringing the Gula. It happens to be that now, more than 2,000 years later, when we look at the Sefer, we look at it similar to the way we look at the Sifrei Nevi'im, because we're living after the time has passed. So it's not so much for us an inspiration for the future. And you can say it is. I mean, you can also look at it that way as well. But
what the rules of canonization are about, that it happens.
Well, that's the question. That is the question. That is the whole debate. There's no question that there's truth to everything. When we look at Sifrei, when we learn Sifrei Nekesuvim, we're learning it very similar to Nevi'im. There are lessons, and there are lessons which we have to deal with, and we have to be inspired, and there's Musar. And every single lesson that was to happen, that's recorded, we can incorporate into our daily lives. That's a given. But is that the primary focus of why the Sefer was written? And that's a big debate. And that answers many questions. That's why you machalik between Sifrei Nevi'im and Sifrei Kesuvim, because the questions are greater than the answers. Why is Nehemiah and Ezra not included in Sifrei Nevi'im? They are Nevi'im. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Ezra was Malachi. Nehemiah was Zerubbabel, which was one of the kings. He was considered to be one of the Malachi Yisrael, pretty much. And so he was a carryover, so that should have been included to some degree during the time of the Nevi'im of Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. So one approach is, you're right, they're a Nevi'im. Even Daniel, we had a whole question, was Daniel a Navi, was Daniel not a Navi? So you have different Chiluki Deus, and you have different Makoris in the Chazal. Some say, no, he was not a Navi, he was only a Chocham Odif Mi Navi. But there are conflicting Memori Chazal, which do seem to indicate that Daniel was also a Navi. But that's a very difficult question, and everyone, there's a very long Radak. In the beginning of Sifrei Nevi'im, the Radak, it's a long discussion of what is a candidate for Nevi'im, what is a candidate for Kesuvim. But there's another approach, and this approach really opens up what Nehemiah is about and what Ezra is about. It's, the focus is, it was written at the time as an inspiration for the people living in this time, which were not so excited about going back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuilding a Bayis Sheni and yearning for Mashiach to come. These things were recorded to highlight specific events or specific ideas, to trigger within them a yearning that yes, we will return to Eretz Yisrael, we will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and we will be part of the process of bringing the Geula. Yeah.
I think an important thing is that we asked why was it written. I think another question is, why were they chosen to be canonized? In other words,
that's another issue. That's a separate issue.
Certain things made it,
right,
and certain things
did not make it.
Didn't make it.
Correct. So the simplest answer for that is, if it was written with the Ruach HaKodesh, the books that were written with a full dosage of Ruach HaKodesh were canonized. And those that were records, Sefer, you have Chanukah, the Sefer HaMaka, Sefer HaMakabiz, what's called Makabim, Sefer Makabim, number one, number two, and there are a whole long list of Ben Sira is different. Right. The Sefer Chitzonios. Why are they Sefer Chitzonios? Some of them were candidates. Sefer HaMakabim was a very powerful, strong candidate to be included in the Sefer Tanakh. No. That's a secular. It's a question even how religious he was. That's a whole different, So, but even though you have a person, a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, and he's a wonderful person, that Tzadik, Yisraelim, doesn't mean he has Ruach HaKodesh. And every single letter, every single ois, every single word was written al pi Ruach HaKodesh to tell us that this is something which we have to record for history, that we have to study with Kedusha and to extract lessons for all generations. But this is a very, we have here Nehemiah. Nehemiah is being written to inspire the people over here are lukewarm about rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, and his recording here is being written after all the events have occurred. But the reason why, because shortly after the Sefer Nehemiah ends, many people, they would slide back into the old mindset of where it was before Nehemiah was written, during the time of Nehemiah, where the vast majority of Klal Yisrael were not really interested in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. They were not interested in emigrating to Eretz Yisrael, rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, resettling, and yearning for Mashiach. And Nehemiah has to say, you're making the biggest mistake. This is not where you don't belong in Bavel, you don't belong in Paras or Molai, you belong in Eretz Yisrael. And by recording what happened in his lifetime, it was an inspiration for the people immediately following him in that generation when it was written, to remember and be inspired with what has happened recently, so they should continue in this way to bring the ultimate gula of Mashiach. Let's go further in Rashi. So we have over here Rashi. Rashi over here is a point that's a very, very important point, that Sefer Nehemiah on the one hand is part of Sefer Ezra, on the other hand it is a separate book. Again, those words, Mikan ve'elich, from those words, Mikan ve'elich, I would indicate that this is a continuation of Sefer Ezra. Kosav Nehemiah, but then Rashi says Sefer Zeh, which means that it's considered to be a separate Sefer. And the Farshim tell us that everything that was written in Nehemiah here was written in first person. When he writes it, he wrote himself. Sefer Ezra was written by two people. Anything that Ezra says in first person was written by Ezra, and anything that's recorded in third person was written by Nehemiah. That's how most Mefarshim learn. So Nehemiah wrote a significant chunk of Sefer Ezra, except for the parts where Ezra speaks in first person. And Sefer Nehemiah, which by and large is all written in first person, was written by Nehemiah himself. Now the next big, big question is, when did this event take place? The last thing we learned in Sefer Ezra was what took place in the 20th year of Daryavesh. Daryavesh gave permission for them to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and they indeed that took place in Daryavesh's his second year of his Malchus. And then 14 years later, Ezra, after the death of the Rebbe of Ezra, Baruch ben Neria, Ezra finally ascends to Eretz Yisrael 14 years later, and he takes and he witnesses intermarriage, and he fasts, and we learned all those parakim, those psukim of what took place in the 20th year of Daryavesh. That would then mean shortly thereafter, right after Ezra finished separating the men who have intermarried, then Nehemiah appears on the scene. And Nehemiah was in Bavel. He did not yet make Aliyah. He was serving Daryavesh. He was the Sar Hamashkim for Daryavesh. And we're going to see he receives a letter from the people, or people come to actually visit him from Eretz Yisrael, describing the horrible conditions that are taking place in Eretz Yisrael. And Nehemiah is distraught, he fasts, and after a long plan, he finally approaches the king, Daryavesh, and he begs him to allow him to leave his post of Sar Hamashkin and return to Eretz Yisrael and assist them in rebuilding the walls, primarily the walls of Yerushalayim. The Beis HaMikdash has been built. We know that it was a Chanukah Savayis, and it's functioning, but the Jewish people are suffering greatly at the hands of their enemies that live in the land. And the Jewish people need chizik, they need to build a wall around the city of Yerushalayim, and Nehemiah is going to arrive on the scene with letters from the Yavish granting him, also similar to Ezra, power and assets, wood and stone to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. So we have to know exactly when this event took place. So the next Rashi says this took place in the Shnas Eshrim. What doesn't tell us anywhere in the Pasuk the 20th year of what? Rashi says Shnas Eshrim l'Daryavesh HaMelech. This is the 20th year of Daryavesh the king. Shuhu Artach Shasta. Daryavesh is also called by the name Artach Shasta. We had many people that are candidates for this name. Koresh was one candidate, and now we're calling Daryavesh as well. We found Shnas Eshrim, Shnas Eshrim Glegzereshava. We make a Gzereshava. It says here in Pasuk Aleph, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Shnas Eshrim, and it says back in Sefer Ezra, the 20th year, Ezra arrived in Eretz Yisrael in the 20th year of Daryavish, min hakosov shenema lamata, vayhi b'chodesh nisan shnas chof li artach shasta, and there artach shasta refers to Daryavish, and therefore through this gezerah shav, it says here shnas esrim, and it says there shnas esrim, so this took place at the same point in time. So that means Ezra finished separating the non-Jewish women from Bnei Yisrael in Chodesh Nisan on the first day of Chodesh Nisan. We know that the process began on the 20th day of Kislev, and then by Chodesh Nisan it was complete, and now the following Kislev is when Nehemiah is receiving a report of what is doing in Eretz Yisrael. This is how we learn what it says in Gemara Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Ulamata nemar vahi b'chodesh Nisan shnas chaf v'goymeru hu Nisan sheba osa shana. Now Rashi is coming to point out, we have to read the pasuk a little bit further, that when we here it says in this pasuk aleph vahi b'chodesh Kislev in the 20th year. A few pesukim later, we're going to have that it was Nisan. Another event took place in Nisan in the 20th year. So Rashi is asking a very similar question, that if Nisan is the time when the year changes, how can it be the same year? How can it be that we're going backwards? How can it both be the 20th year? Once you get to Aleph Nisan, you already go into the new year. It should be the 21st year. And Rashi answers that being that we're dealing with counting the year to the year of Daryavish, and Daryavish is a non-Jewish king. By non-Jewish kings, we calculate the years from Tishrei, not from Nisan. The problem is, we learned in Ezra, okay, I don't have the details in front of me, but we learned in Ezra that there was another pasuk where we did count the year from Nisan, not from the year of Tishrei. When we're in the beginning of his Malchus, when he gave permission for the Jewish people to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash in the second year of his Malchus, there's a diak in the pasuk that we count the year from Nisan, not from Tishrei. And Chazal answer that he turned sour. Daryavish started off as a tzaddik. He was very loyal to the Jewish people, and therefore the greatest cover they can give Daryavish is to count his years as if he was a Jewish king. What kind of gift can you give a king? The king has everything. The greatest gift you can give is kavod. What kind of kavod? Something which is important to you. That for us, we're going to consider you a Jewish king, even though you're a non-Jew. Well, that's debatable, because his mother might have been Esther. But even if his mother was Esther, he certainly does not appear to be a practicing Orthodox Jew. So he was technically considered to be, as far as halacha is concerned, not Jewish. But yet, as an honor to Daryavish, they calculated his years according to the Jewish year. But that was only early in his reign. By the time he was ready, 20 years into his reign, he turned sour. He wasn't so excited about the Jewish people, he wasn't so excited about them building the Beis HaMikdash and doing what they were doing, and therefore he reverted to a non-Jewish king, and now we're going to calculate his years, we're going to calculate them from Chodesh Tishrei, like we calculate all non-Jewish kings. So this will be what Rashi says. It says later on in the pasuk that b'chodesh nisan shnas chaf v'goymer b'chush nisan shabos hashana ve'ein yachal liftor v'lo ma'min nisan hayu moinin l'cheshbon shnosem v'osa ma'is ha'kosa l'mata shnema vi b'chodesh nisan hayu koyde ma'is hazeh. You can't possibly say that the pasukim are going out of order. That when it says later on that it was chodesh nisan in the 20th year, that was an event which took place the year before. Here it says that it was in chodesh kislev. There it says it was in chodesh nisan. So you may suggest that the two events that we're going to learn about are out of order. First came the event that took place later. Then we go backwards in time to the event which took place earlier, which took place in Nisan. That's impossible, Rashi says, because of the details. We have to go with the details, but when Rashi is telling us that, trust me on this, when you read the story, you will see that it has to be that these two events are in order. That these two events happened one after the other. First event led into the second event. Therefore, we have no choice but to say that when we're going to calculate the years of the Daryavish, the non-Jewish king, we're calculating his years like the non-Jewish kings, in which Tishrei precedes Chodesh Nisan. Okay, and it says, this is really quoting the Gemara. Okay, that's Rashi's quoting the Gemara Masechta Rashi Daf Gimel, and it's according to Rashi's explanation there. Now let's go back. Let's go back.
Does that mean that Rashi subscribed to what you said about Daryavish turning sour?
No, he did, because over here in this section it has to be like that. In this section it's clear that we're counting Daryavish's years here in Nechemya, the 20th year, according to the non-Jewish kings. We would find that the Jewish kings was the beginning of his malchus. In the third and second year, when he granted permission for the Jewish people to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, that was in Daryavish's second year. And there we learned the Diuk in the Psukim that it was according to the Jewish years. So that means when the Daryavish first became king, the Klal Yisrael counted his years like a Jewish king. But 14 years later, all these years later, well, that was more than 14, but yeah.
That Rashi or the Mitzuda says nothing about Shushan HaBira.
Yeah.
And two, I don't remember in the Sefer Ezra, was Shushan HaBira ever mentioned?
I think in Daniel it was mentioned.
But in Ezra,
I don't think so, no. I don't remember. I could be wrong. But in Daniel, yes. In the Shushan HaBira, the Mepharshim do point of Bira means it was not a city. There's the ear Shushan, Vehoir Shushan Novocha. This is what it says in the Megillah. The city of Shushan was distraught when they heard about the decree, Lahashmi Laharibis Kola Yehudim. Here it says Shushan HaBira. In the Megillah also we have Shushan HaBira. That's a different section. Some learned that it was not even part of the city of Shushan. It was in a different area. Some learned that it was within, like New York State, New York City. You have Washington, exactly, within the city itself. Some learn that's really the difference between Yerushalayim and Tzion. Some learn that Tzion was the part of Yerushalayim that was set aside for the kings.
It's
one without, well, one or
one with a shwa.
And also one represents
the large area and the city.
Inside the city itself. So we have Yerushalayim. Within Yerushalayim there was a section that was reserved for the kings called Tzion. So here we have that same idea. We have Shushan HaBira. So let's go further. And now here Ezra records what happened. Vayavoy Chanoni Echad Me'achai. Chanoni, one of my brothers. Now, it doesn't mean brother. Unfortunately, we'll point out it means one of my friends, my companions. Who? Him. Va'anoshim Me'yehuda. They arrived. We have a visitor here. It is Chodesh Kislev. Does not tell us the date. It will seemingly be the first day of Chodesh Kislev, the 20th year of Daryavish, according to Rashi. Rashi interpretation. I'll have to go back and tell you another in one moment. Let's go a few psukim first. Vayavoy Chanoni, Echad Me'achai, V'hu Va'anoshim Me'yehuda, V'esh Olem, I, Nechemya, asked them, I inquired al HaYehudim concerning the welfare of the Jews, HaPaleta, the remnant, Asher Nish'aru, which have remained, survived, Min HaShevi, from the captivity, and I've also asked the al Yerushalayim. Now what is going on here in this pasuk? So Rashi, very quickly, Rashi says, Echad Me'achai, Rashi says, Achai does not mean my brother, means my companions, Echad Me'chaveri, my companions, V'eshalim al Yal HaYehudim, שאלתי לכם על עניין פליטס היהודים אשר נשאר בירושלים מן השבי של בבל. That remained from the captivity of also. Who is the Shevi? The Shevi refers to those the captivity of Bavel who have returned. They've only returned for how many years has it been since they've returned? It's now 20th year of Daryavish, and Daryavish was 14, so it's about 35 years, approximately 35 years since they have returned, the Shevi of Bavel have returned to Eretz Yisrael, and now already 35 years later, they're still in the process of developing and cultivating the land, HaPleita, Al Shem Shenitzolu Migolus Bavel, V'al Yerushalayim, V'al Inyin Ho'ir Shalti Aleihem. I asked about Yerushalayim. Now, Rav Shrab asked a question, why did he have to ask them? We know that we know about their condition. It's already been 35 35 years. We know that Koresh issued he let them travel to Eretz Yisrael. They began to build the Beis HaMikdash. There was a building freeze. 14 years later, after the miracle of Purim, Daryavish allowed them to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And now it is approximately 17 years later since they have been granted permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash took only 6 years to complete, which means that it's about 11, 12 years since they finished the Beis HaMikdash. What is this request? I'm so concerned about the condition of the people. So Rav Schwab says, based upon some of the Mepharshim, that during these last 11 to 10 years since they concluded building the Beis HaMikdash, the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael were under attack. And there were horrible pogroms. And there were horrible chorbanos that took place, even to the degree where the Mikdash was almost destroyed. Once again, they built the Beis HaMikdash. It was obviously not a very spectacular building. And the Goyim who lived in the region would stage continuous assaults and attacks on the people and on the Beis HaMikdash. As we're going to see, they burned down the gates and they burned down various structures that were rebuilt by the Jews who have returned from Babel with the permission of Daryavish over that 6 year period of time. It took them 6 years to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and shortly thereafter much of what they rebuilt was destroyed and many Jews were killed and taken captive. And reports did reach Shushan HaBira, did reach back to the Jews living in Babel, but they did not know the scope and the details of what have happened in these pogroms and these horrible incidences that have occurred during this period of time. So here they've arrived, this person Hanani, and I'm curious, what I heard bad news. Tell me exactly what happened. Pasuk Gimel, Vayomru li, so they said to me, Hanisharim, the survivors. Now these words are very scary words. Hanishar means a lot of people were killed. A lot of people they lost their lives, were taken as slaves, were taken as captives, even though this is already after the Churban. You think now everything is going to be fine and good. The Churban already was over 70 years ago, 95 years ago, they rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, everything should be rosy. No, they rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash and it was destroyed, at least partially, once again, and many people were killed and were taken away. And that's why you have this very scary word called Hanish Arim, the survivors. Vayomuli Hanishadim, Asher Nishadim Min HaShevi, repeats itself, that have survived Min HaShevi, from the captivity, Sham, Bamedina, in the Medina, Bira'ah Gidola, the people that have survived from the captivity there in that Medina are in a very dire straits. Bira'ah Gidola Uvecherpa, great evil and disgrace. V'choymas Yerushalayim Mifoy Rotzes, and the wall of Yerushalayim has been breached. U'she'orech, and its gates are nitzisu v'esh, have been burnt in fire. Pasuk Gimel in Rashi, Vayomuli Hayeshivu li al Rishon v'Yishuv al Acharon, and Acharon Tchila al Inyan HaYudim. They answered in order. First, he asked, tell me about the situation of the Jews. V'achakach al Inyan HaChoymos v'Hasharim Hanisharim Osma HaYehudim Asher Nishar Yerushalayim Bevinas Yerushalayim Heim Nisunim Bero'ah Gidoyla Uvicherpa, lefi sha'ovdei koychavim bozizim, the non-Jews living there are plundering them, v'shoylulim oisam, and are robbing and bringing upon them great harm. Furthermore, the choymos Yerushalayim mifoy rotzes, the wall of Yerushalayim has been shattered, the choymos uir harehi perutza, it's open, v'hasha'arim, the gates serufim bo'esh kikad mosan, like before, they did not get a chance to rebuild the walls of the city. The only thing they were granted permission to do is to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash itself. Now, nitzisu kumoi noitzosu, which means it's been kindled, it's been set on fire. Now, because of this, a lot of this is ikar chosam and asefer. We are reading a lot into the psukim. If you read the psukim, this is where Rav Schwab explains. You read the psukim here, it's 14 years, it's the 20th year of Dayavish. We have to get all the numbers in order. Dayavish, in the second year of his Malchus, granted permission for the Jewish people to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. It took them about 6 years to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So that takes us to the 8th year, approximately the 8th year of Dayavish. Now it's the 20th year of Dayavish. So it's 12 years later. It's 12 years after the Chanukah Sabayis. Here, Nehemiah is sitting in Shushan HaBira. These people arrive and they say, it's horrible that people are Bira'ah Gedola and there's great Cherpa and the walls have been breached and the gates have been burned down. What? Again, we explained. But you've been granted permission. There was a Chanukah Sabayis. There was great celebration. Ezra has arrived on the scene. What's going on? The answer, as Rashi alludes, says, is that even though they rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, there's been new attacks. A new Chorban has occurred. The problem is, a lot of that is not recorded anywhere. We have really no record of, surely after they rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, I remember dealing with that after, surely after the miracle of Purim, where everyone was afraid, V'rabi me'ame haretz nisya hadin. This is only how many years after? This is surely after the Purim miracle. And all of a sudden, so quickly the tide has turned, and there's such enormous Churban taking place in Eretz Yisrael. And Nehemiah has to hear about this, doesn't know about this, doesn't know about the scope, and then he sits down and he mourns. We'll see the degree of mourning that we're going to see is incredible, it's unusual. So therefore, there's a Tosfos in Masechta Rashan, Daf Gimel, where Rashi is taking a lot of this from, that this agrees with Rashi. And he says that when it says here, this took place in the 20th year, it doesn't say the 20th year of Daryavish, in the 20th year of Koresh. Koresh didn't make it that long. Koresh didn't survive 20 years. Koresh, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it means it was during the reign of Achashverosh, before the miracle of Purim. It was before the miracle of Purim, which means that 20 years since Koresh took office, which now takes us, I have to get you the exact numbers, hopefully I'll appear better next time, it takes us to the years, the beginning of the Malchus of Achashverosh, which means everything we're reading here now is taking place much before the time of Ezra. The books are totally out of order. And now he's receiving reports about the Churban. There is no Beis HaMikdash. It has not yet been rebuilt. They didn't yet build a Beis HaMikdash. And people have returned. Koresh did grant permission in the third year of his, in the first year of his Malchus, for people to return to Eretz. So 42,306 people returned. But then shortly thereafter, in the third year of his Malchus, he issued a building freeze, which, because of the sitna, the letter of accusation that was issued by the Aseres B'nei Haman, and that turned the tide, and the Jews were under attack, and these 42,360 people were polarized. They were suffering daily. And now it's during the beginning of the Malchus of Achashverosh, before the miracle of Purim, and now Nehemiah is sitting in Shushan HaBira, and this is before Esther, before all of these things are happening, and the Jews are in a very pathetic situation. So when you read these psukim have much more meaning. It's much simpler to understand the psukim, plus the gimel, it's much simpler when you read, when you interpret pasuk aleph to mean not to mean shnas eshim, the 20th year of Daryavesh, which puts the story of Nehemiah after the story of Ezra. 20 years since the rise of Koresh, and Koresh only lasted about 10, whatever it was, a couple of not that many years. And then Achashverosh took the throne, and before the miracle of Purim unfolded, Nehemiah is in Shushan HaBira, and he hears horrible reports, and then it makes sense. Itaka does make sense, because that was during the time of the Sitna, we were under the control of the Aseres B'nei Haman. Yeah. Entirely, not part of it, entirely. The very small section of Ezra is before, as will then be before. Only the very, very beginning of Sefer Ezra. Ein Moktum, that's why Rashi rejects. Rashi is very strong. You have to go back and read the words of Rashi more carefully. Rashi is very strongly against this position of Tosfos. There's a fundamental question in the beginning of Nehemiah. when did the events take place? Do they take place after Ezra? Do they take place before Ezra? There's another very important question, that is, why do we need Nehemiah? If according to the Rashi interpretation, the very similar interpretation, that is the 20th year, this event took place immediately after Ezra separated the non-Jewish women. Ezra's already there. So why couldn't Ezra take the lead in rebuilding the walls of the city and establishing
what Ezra's doing at this point?
Exactly. Big mystery.
It's
a very difficult question that all the commentators have on Rashi. Where is Ezra? We're going to have an elaborate thing, all these different events about Chil Shabbos and his instant muksa. Where is Ezra?
He didn't do anything. That's why he said boshti. We learned he was ashamed that he, all these things.
But he said boshti before Nehemiah.
And I was in the background. I was...
But he's saying boshti, according to that interpretation, before, and then, so now I'm embarrassed, so now I'm going to make restitution, I'm going to do tshuva, and now Nehemiah arrives, so he should participate together with Nehemiah and make tikkun.
He should be mentioned.
Yeah, he should be mentioned. He disappeared. He fell off the face of the earth.
He might have gotten older, said, I did what I could do, I can't do anything.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But this is a very great difficulty with the Perish Rashi. And you have to just keep in mind these two mahalakim. When did the event take place? According to Rashi, the events are taking place immediately after Ezra finished separating the non-Jewish women, and what we learned at the end of Ezra. Now Nehemiah hears what's going on. What's going on? Where is Ezra? That's according to Tosis. The events here took place way before, and that it took place before Ezra arrived in Eretz Yisrael, when Baruch ben Neriya was alive and Ezra was out of reach. He was isolated, he exploited us with his Rebbe. Ezra did not appear on the scene, and now we have a politician, so to speak. We have Nehemiah, he's serving, he's working in the government office, and he hears a report. It's during the reign of Ahasuerus. It's one of the darkest times in Jewish history, when the Aseres B'nei Haman issued a sitna, a letter of accusation, and the Jews and the storm is building for the horror of what's going to happen at the time of Purim. Lahashmit Lahara Gulabit. Right in this dark time is when this event of Nehemiah takes place, which is an amazing insight. It totally changes the look, your perspective on the Megillah, when you see that Nehemiah was right there, right before the miracle of Purim. Some of the things that he enacted, perhaps gave Klal Yisrael the courage, Lech Kinos Eskol HaYehudim HaNimtzim B'Shushan. Where did they get that courage to come together? Kinos Eskol HaYehudim. It could very well be it was due to Nehemiah. Nehemiah is the secret hero of the Megillah. Gets no mention. Not mentioned. Nowhere. You got to read between the lines. It's very interesting. We have to go through this with you. Now before we finish, I just wanted to mention one other point, and this has to be understood depending on how you learn the events, when they took place, before or after. There's a fundamental difference between Ezra and Nehemiah. We have a pasuk, Asur Meira Va'asei Tov. Every mitzvah, all the mitzvahs are divided between a mitzvah say and a mitzvah sloy say, positive and negative. There are things that you have to surmeira, separate from ra, and then there's the positive aseit of this ahava. We spoke about this a few times. This ahava Hashem and this yiras Hashem. When you want to do something for Hakadosh Baruch Hu, that comes from the emotion of love. When you want to fear Hakadosh Baruch Hu, you want to not do an aveira, that comes from the emotion of fear of yiras Hashem. Ezra's focus was aseit of. If you look carefully, Ezra is always coming to make tikkunim, to do things. We're going to learn. You have to learn Torah. This can't go on like this. Every day you go 3 days without learning Torah, make a takana. We're going to learn the Torah 3 times a week. Shabbos, and we're going to learn Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha. We're going to learn not one pasuk, not three, we're going to learn 9 psukim. Ezra comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he separates. Well, that's a sumera, but you have to be very careful how you find that. But Ezra's main focus is to inject Klal Yisrael with Kedusha. Asay Tov. Nehemiah, as we're going to see in the whole story, his focus is to establish barriers, to establish gedorim, to prevent people from doing ra. His focus is to build the walls of Yerushalayim. Now, on a simple level, security, you have to have walls. But on a deeper level, his avoda is to establish barriers. Takonas gedorim. The Klal Yisrael now is a new tkufa. The Bayis Sheni, we're not on the level of the Bayis Rishon. We need enactments. People always talk about, oh, today you go to a wedding and there's separate seating. How come it was only 50 years ago we remember the Gedolei Yisrael, there was mixed seating? So the answer is very obvious. I mean, everyone says that answer. It's a different generation. The people today, they're not in the frame of mind. Today, the younger generation needs more Gedorim. They need more safeguards. They don't have that same discipline like it's a chasara that we need to have separate seating. If we were more dignified, more greater Yari Shemayim, it's not an issue. It's not an issue. Look at the Gemara. That lo hayu yom tam lishol kituba of and Yom Kippur. What were they doing on Yom Kippur? There was mixed dancing. Interesting, mixed dancing. The boys went out to watch the girls dance. The girls got dressed in white clothing, they watched them dance, and they would chop a girl for a shidduch. Today, if you do this, you're in chayrim, you're finished. It's like, it's Ezra was the one, Nehemiah is the one who's coming to establish Gedorim for Klal Yisrael. Who is the one that invented, who created Muksa? On Shabbos, he can't touch Muksa. It was Nehemiah. This was the one, the beginning of Mishael Shabbos, not so long ago. Before Nehemiah, could you imagine Shabbos? It's Shabbos. Imagine your Shabbos. You can touch and move anything you want. You have a hammer, or a hammer is not a good example. You have rocks, you have a hammer. There's no limitation what you can touch, what you can move on Shabbos. Ezra was the one that was Misaki and Muksa. Ezra is the one that's going to Nehemiah is the one that's going to build the wall around the city to establish Gedorim. Ezra is the one that's building the Beis HaMikdash. Ezra's coming to the Mechazek, the Binyan HaMikdash, the Kedusha, the Yichus of the Kohanim, the Levim, and the Yisraelim. He's coming to inject the highest degree in sanctity in the Beis HaMikdash. But Gedorim, safeguards, that we shouldn't fall back and do Averos. Who needs safeguards? You don't need safeguards. If you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, everything will be okay. That's the Avoda of Nehemiah. See, these two people, these two Ishei HaTanach, are two halves of one coin. And that's why the two are joined together in these two svarim. There is Ezra and Nehemiah. Ezra is Asay Tov. Nehemiah is Sur Meira. If you study the sugya in depth, there's a very big debate which comes first. The pasuk says Sur Meira Va'asay Tov. The first thing is turn away from evil, but Va'asay Tov. But halacha l'maisa, many instances, the way we do it, especially in our generation, is first asay tov. Don't focus so much on the aveir. First, focus on doing good, and then the nelo you'll work on the sumeira at a later point in time. Here we have these two ishei atnach juxtaposed: Ezra, Nehemiah. Ezra is clearly asay tov. Nehemiah is sumeira. Which one comes first? Just like there's a very big debate, which one comes first in different areas, one will come first, others will come first, the Pasuk puts it first. Sur Meira, the Pasuk makes very clear. Sur Meira, Va'asei Tov. But yet look at Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah is an avoda of Asei Tov. Then comes Yom Kippur, where we do Sur Meira. These two Ishei HaTanach represent these two concepts. They're back to back. They're part of one sefer, as Rashi says, Mikan ve'elich. But yet, it's a sefer by itself. Each one is a sugi by itself. Which one comes first? Well, there's truth to both. The pasuk is purposely vague. It was in the 20th year. When was the 20th year for who? Daryavesh, or was it the 20th year of Koresh? Because whatever it was in Mitzias, there's what to learn. It was purposely written in a vague fashion that it could have very well been the other way around as well. And the lessons are there to learn from, whether it was first, whether it was after, whether it's a Seitov, Sumira, or Sumira v'aseitov. Okay, so these are some the basic yisodos to throw out. As Agdama to say for Nehemiah, the Chilik, Nehemiah, and Ezra, when did the events take place? Was it taking place in time before Ezra, later than Ezra? And Richard will pick it up with more tomorrow.